Good evening, and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley, a monthly program where WDIY will chat with Becky Bradley, the Executive Director of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and we also welcome Matt Assad, the Managing Editor of the Commission. This is a program where we will explore the current and ongoing regional planning in the Lehigh Valley. Welcome, Matt, and welcome, Becky.
Hello.
Becky is the Executive Director. Can you first give us just a general overview of what you do, as this is our first show?
Absolutely. The Lehigh Valley Planning Commission is a two-county planning commission. So for Northampton and Lehigh counties, essentially that makes up the Lehigh Valley. We've been around since 1961, so this is our 60th anniversary year here in 2021. And under a state law, we look at all the subdivision and land development plans, municipal ordinance changes, write the regional plan, and are advisors to local governments on those subdivision and land development issues. We also have a second board under a federal law, and that's called the Lehigh Valley Transportation Study. And we look at all the transportation planning and then manage an investment portfolio in road, bridge, transit, bike, and pedestrian investment of over $2 billion.
That's quite a bit of oversight that you have. Matt, as the communications person, what's your role?
Well, people probably don't realize it, but the Planning Commission has an incredible number of publications. Just in the last month, we published a couple of weeks ago, we published our annual housing market report. Last month, we published our Build LV development report. And in the same month, we also published our 104-page annual report, which has a vast, varied aspects to it. And my job is to sort of take all of the really good analysis by our incredible planners. I mean, they're super smart. And sort of put it in a way that's digestible for everyone. So we do that with the publications, which now can be all on the internet. So everything we do is on the internet. And handle communications and the media and really just kind of stay out of the way so our planners can get their stuff out there.
So you deal really with four different sectors, and you need to coordinate with all these folks. So you've got the various governments, you've got the private sector, you have nonprofit organizations, and the general public. How do you spin that plate? How do you bring them all together to agree on anything?
Patience. And I hope you think that one's fair, Matt. But at the end of the day, we do a lot of convening because that's an opportunity to collaborate with people. Clearly, that's changed because of the pandemic, and it's, you know, online or continuing to be online, at least for the foreseeable future. But, you know, when you really get down to it, you realize that people often have a common set of core goals, even in some cases a common set of core values. And then it's our job to kind of distill that into the policy framework for how the region is going to function. And then those partners spend a lot of time, you know, going forward and implementing a lot of those things. But you can't do that unless, you know, you're building the partnerships all along the way, and then maintaining those and nurturing them. And so that's actually one of the largest roles that we have as a regional agency.
One of the interesting things is we had to pivot very quickly. We had a lot of public meetings where a lot of folks came to talk about things, and they were part of the conversation. We had these planning and pizzas, and we had data and donuts, and we had planning and pretzels, and workshop meetings, and we pivoted very quickly, and what we're finding is that we probably get more people coming to the virtual meetings just because it's more convenient and they can do it quickly. And even though they don't get food, they can still, they can still be part of the conversation. The give and take isn't as good as when we're in the room, but it's a different way of doing things, and we sort of have adapted, and there are pros and cons to it.
Well, it changes as we're doing this show right now. Normally, you would be in the studio with us, and we're doing this over phones. And it's hard to pick up the nonverbal characteristics of a person's discussion when you're doing a show like this. And so I'm sure that it probably changes the way you do your meetings also.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
What are some of the, not that this is a positive thing, but what have you learned that can help you moving forward with the Planning Commission coming from this past year?
that absolutely nothing is the same, and that, you know, we have a new normal. And we know a little bit about what that new normal is, but, you know, we're going to have to spend, you know, the next couple of years as we come out of this pandemic really watching, observing, managing the changes that are in front of us. And that's not something that we're going to do alone. There's, you know, tons of community leaders that are rolling up their sleeves thinking about very similar things, because, you know, what we thought was going to happen isn't necessarily what's going to happen now. I mean, I think the world has substantially changed. And at a time when we were already in the middle of the fourth industrial revolution and technology was evolving things very rapidly anyway.
Becky, is there anything that you could see that we were heading into a year ago that automatically stopped and changed the direction of the Planning Commission? Anything, oh, we were going to do this, but now we're going to not do this or do something different?
Well, interestingly enough, there was, I mean, let's be honest about it. We're long-range planners, so
right,
we're inherently futurists. So believe it or not, the pandemic actually tested where we were prior to the pandemic and were we on the right path. And believe it or not, by and large, we were. Did some things change where we had to pause certain activities and things that we were going to work on because pandemic response became more important, especially around housing and eviction and foreclosure potential and job loss? Yes, we paused a lot of things to focus on that work. That included some climate action things that we were working on, which now we're going to start to pick back up, some transportation safety related things we had to pause on. Again, we're starting to pick that stuff back up. But at the end of the day, it was more of the pandemic response is our highest priority because it absolutely has to be. And then maintaining things we're required to do under the law, like subdivision and land development reviews. So that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges that we've seen is everywhere else in the world slowed down. The Lehigh Valley, the amount of development went up during a global pandemic, in essentially an economic slowing of the global market, really overall, not so in the Lehigh Valley. So we kept our doors open the entire time to be able to just process the amount of development activity being proposed by, interestingly enough, not just the private sector, but also academic institutions, nonprofits, and others last year.
Matt, why do you think that is?
Why do I think that? Well, I mean, I think what's happened, and I think Becky has said this many times, that the things that have changed, we were on the right path, but we're seeing them come more quickly. We're seeing things come faster. So some of the things that we thought were going to happen are actually happening more quickly than we thought. And we have to sort of speed up how we were moving and how we were going. I think Becky has said this many times, you know, what I think the Wall Street Journal once called the retail apocalypse, and the decline of retail and the sort of in-store purchase, that obviously is moving faster. So that's one of those things that we have to change and move with.
Well, we're outpacing the rest of the country when it comes to growth and plans. How many plans did you review last year?
453 development plans. That's a pretty big number, actually, and is really on par with some of the levels of development proposal that we saw during the housing boom back in the early 2000s. So it really was the second most since the Great, Great Recession. The last 2 years have really been busy, like 2019, 2020 busy, and 2021, this first quarter has been definitely hopping.
How do you digest more than one plan a day?
Well, and it's more complicated than that, because on top of that, we had 63 municipal ordinance review changes, so law changes we needed to review, as well as 150 stormwater management plans. You just roll up your sleeves and dive in. I mean, even I was helping out. I still am when you know, we get a windfall, because these things have deadlines, too. The state law is very clear. You've got 30 days to review this against the county policy, which is adopted in future LV, the regional plan. And so, you know, we have to do that. in a lot of these developments we're seeing now are enormous. They're large industrial, they're large housing developments. So we're also, it's not just a lot line adjustment in most cases. You know, lot line adjustments are easy because the neighbor wants a few feet for a shed and they cut a deal with their neighbor to sell them, you know, 5-10 feet. Those are super easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, when you're talking about reviewing, you know, 4 million square feet worth of industrial, and you have to check that the transportation impact assessments are accurate, because we do that for the local government. And that's a very, very important role, because in some cases, you can have a situation where your traditional e-commerce facility has about like 1,200 vehicle trips per day if it's around 200,000 square feet. But if that becomes a high cube or an automated warehouse, so that's essentially a warehouse on top of a warehouse, you know, you could have as many as 8,100 vehicle trips per day. And that's a huge difference in the amount of impact on the roads, the bridges, you know, quality of life, air quality, those sorts of things. And so, you know, we just have to dive in. That's our role. We take that seriously. And it's interesting because actually you talk to the people in the office, we actually enjoy doing this kind of work. It's important.
You'd have
to make sure that, yeah, you have to. And it's important that the local governments have our support, because they're the ones that ultimately make the decision. So the more information we can give them on existing conditions, quality of development, is it likely to be successful? Because that's really what we're looking for at the end of the day. You know, if you build a warehouse like way off a highway, what's the end user of that? Is going to be harder to find, number one. Number two, you know, that's going to have more impact on our local road network, where if it was up against a highway, it would have less impact. It's still going to have impact. So, you know, a lot of the times we're looking for things like that, because you don't want investment to go in, especially if it's speculative investment, which by the way, most warehouses are on speculation. They
could you
don't
explain
know who
that
the end user is.
To our listeners? Could you explain that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of what's happening in the industrial market is e-commerce warehousing type development. So it's basically because we're shopping online, shopping in app, and those have kind of, in a lot of ways, replaced much of the retail, in-store retail that we've enjoyed for the last, you know, decades. So that's really substantially changed. What developers will do is they'll come in and say, well, hey, we know we can, you know, recruit e-commerce businesses over to Lehigh Valley because their taxes are lower, because their land values are lower than over in New Jersey. And we haven't valued ourselves enough in a number of cases. And so what happens then is these major national and even international developers come in and they speculate. So they say, we're just going to recruit them in, so we're going to go ahead and get this development approved. And, you know, municipal governments only have so many days to review these things. And we only have 30 days. You know, they basically have 3 months. That's it. And so they're looking at traffic impacts that are estimated. They don't even know who's going to be in those facilities, which creates a whole host of problems, quite frankly.
So this is really a build it and they will come type of idea?
Truly. Absolutely.
Wow.
And they're making, the private sector is making literally millions and millions of dollars a year off of the speculation, because they are coming. And so it's the private sector that's driving this stuff. And in a lot of ways, our municipal governments have their hands tied, because under Pennsylvania law, they're required to have at least two parcels zoned for every possible use you could think of somewhere in their municipality, even if it makes no sense. That's what the law says. And so that's why you're seeing all these industrial developments pop up in locations where you wouldn't expect to see them. And in a lot of ways, the private sector has deemed the Lehigh Valley as kind of the Wild West for warehouse and logistics.
So how do you build the infrastructure to a warehouse when you don't know what's going to go in there?
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. And that's one of the greatest concerns that we have for our region, because the infrastructure investments do not follow once the development's in. That is completely false. If you ever hear that, they're not telling you the truth or they're ill-informed. And this is very important. If you don't have sewer and water, you can never support manufacturing. If you don't have adequate road and bridge infrastructure, you're not going to get the highest quality tenant. You know, and you see those high quality tenants going into industrial facilities along the highway where they should be. You see your lower quality tenants going further and further away from the highway network looking for a deal. And those are the ones that have the impact. But, it's creating all kinds of emergency management services problems. You know, what if the storage facility is for hazardous materials? And a lot of that stuff falls out of the hands. Exactly. And a lot of that falls out of the hands of the local government themselves, and that the state law is like, well, you got to accommodate it, so figure out where to put it. And that's not necessarily fair. And it's really challenging the idea of the public health, safety, and welfare in the Lehigh Valley.
So you're really working with puzzles almost every day, trying to fit things into a map that you really don't really know what the end result is going to be. Does that make sense?
You're absolutely right. But we look at it more like it's a space-time continuum, right? Like communities are always changing. So if you have these inputs, especially ones you can't control, coming at you, well, you're going to have to adjust. So how do you adjust to then maintain these other things that are priorities for the region, which is our farmlands and our agricultural economy, our natural resources, our water quality, our air quality, housing, access to good schools? All of these things have to be balanced. And when you have an imbalance in, you know, one sector or another, then that creates a series of issues that, you know, we work on every day. And, you know, industrial and housing are at the top of the list of things that we're working the most on right now.
Let's talk about housing. Yeah. I have friends who are real estate brokers, and people will put their house up for sale and get five bids in a day. I mean, what's going on? Where are these people coming from?
I don't know if I can tell you where they're coming from. I think a lot from New Jersey and New York. But I think the bottom line is, and you can see it in our latest housing market report, is there just is not enough inventory to handle the demand. So I think the report on the Lehigh Valley basis showed that there was something on the line of 3,100 homes and apartments available for people to have. And for the market to be healthy, there should be about 10,000. So there's not nearly enough. And if you look at the prices, that how they've changed over the past year alone, the average home sale is $25,000 more just in the past year, and that is an increase that was equal to the previous 6 years before that.
Incredible.
So there's just a lot of folks. Yeah, it is incredible. And there's just a lot of folks that want to live here. It's a desirable place to live because we have sort of achieved that balance that Becky's talking about. And I know some of our planners, even though there haven't been a lot of statistics on this, they theorize a little bit that the pandemic actually accelerated this, because people who no longer are tied to their homes to go to work in New York or in New Jersey can work remotely now from here, so that there is a bit of an influx of folks that can now do that because of the pandemic, and probably will be able to do that for the foreseeable future. So they've come here to buy houses and to get apartments, driving up, you know, the prices of both.
So, Matt, the idea that I work in New York, but I'd much rather live in the Lehigh Valley. I mean, who wouldn't? At least as a person who lives here. This is really an interesting and good thing if the puzzle can be put together.
Yeah. So it used to be, if you had that phenomenon, and we had a lot of folks doing that, you traded a 90-minute commute for a bigger lot and a bigger house. Now you don't even have to do the commute. You could just have the bigger lot and the bigger house and still work in New York.
So are people downsizing in general here, their living space, and or are they just buying more?
Both. That's both, for sure. Household size, average household size, is declining. So there's fewer and fewer people per household. In many cases, that means they don't want as much space. In some cases where you have families, you're going to need more space. And there's we have shortages all across the board. all types of houses, and interestingly enough, at every price point. And we're working a lot right now on figuring out where we need housing by income. That's very important because there's a mismatch between people's incomes in some cases. Actually, there's over 81,000 households in the Lehigh Valley right now that are paying more than 30% of their income for housing, which by federal standards is called cost burdening, like they're paying more than they should, and that puts them at risk. And so, you know, we've got to figure out how to manage that mismatch. We also need more housing units. And Matt had mentioned, you know, the private sector is starting to respond. Matt, I can't remember what it was. How many units were approved last year?
I think the number approved last year was a little over 1,900, and that's really the most approved since before the Great Recession.
Would you call this affordable housing?
No, I don't.
Well,
think
it's all affordable.
I think our studies
for someone,
have shown
right?
that that's what's needed most.
I used to live in the Florida Keys for a while, and one of the problems that we had there that the average house was something like $700,000, and so our first responders couldn't afford to live there. I mean, do you see that becoming an issue?
No.
Or so we'll always have enough room for the people that we really need.
Well, it's more complicated than that, and that's where our work becomes important because we have shortages across all income ranges. And really what's happened, the simplest way to put it, is we have compression in the market. Mm-hmm. We do not have enough housing at the high end, and then we do not have enough housing at the low end. So the people at the low end that don't have housing are forced to buy up. That puts them in that cost burden position. And the people that could buy up don't have anything to buy into. So it's basically creating compression in the middle of the sandwich. And then that's driving up costs for middle-income people and pushing them, in some cases, into a position of being cost-burdened. And so we've got to work on balancing that out. And I look at it like a big knot that we have to untangle. And you have to work every aspect of that problem. And that's really what we're doing through we call them workshops, a housing workshop. And I think April 15th, we have a meeting on that. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes, 3 p.m. April 15th. And you can register for that because it's open table and everyone is welcome. You can register for that at lvpc.org.
And while we're talking about some of the issues that surround growth, these are really good problems to have, aren't they?
Sometimes. Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. In the industrial sector, some of that industrial growth is great, especially some of the quality manufacturing that we're getting. It's good, at least right now, to some extent on the e-commerce that's up against the highway and has the adequate infrastructure. Because, you know, you have jobs at, you know, $13, even $18 an hour or more, and those have then replaced those in-store retail jobs that had been declining at a much higher hourly rate. So that's fine until those facilities start to automate, which they are, and then those jobs go away. So, you know, it's always a give and take, I guess, is the point. And that gets back to how we look at our role in a community as a very dynamic thing that's never going to, you know, be the same tomorrow as it is today. And getting out in front of that, thinking through that, and then working with individuals that can prepare for that change to keep our community going is really, really important.
As we look to the growth, what would you say is the greatest tension point, if you will, today? What concerns you the most? Is there one issue where you say, we got to get the sewers ready? Or is there something where you just say, wow, this one really has to get fixed?
Hey, Matt, what do you think? Because you might, I mean, there's a bunch of things, but you might think differently.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of fix. I think it's what we talked about earlier. It's the balance. So the biggest issue is growth without using up the land that everybody comes here to see, the open space, the farmland, our natural resources. So you have to grow in the right places. I mean, that, I think, is the primary issue behind all of it, sort of achieving that balance, growing without ruining the, you know, the Lehigh Valley's charm.
When we are looking at growth and balance, what's the one thing, Matt, that you think would surprise the average listener where they would say, well, I don't know, I didn't know that?
Well, we had a discussion at one of our recent public meetings, and it was very passionate discussion about warehouses and very passionate discussion about the loss of farmland. All of it's true, and all of it's part of that balance. I think most people would be surprised to know, though, that we have preserved, between the two counties, 43,000 acres of farmland. That's almost 70 square miles of farmland that's been preserved in the Lehigh Valley by the two counties and the voters, because the voters in both counties have agreed to pay a little extra tax to preserve farmland. So I think that would surprise a lot of folks.
And once again, remind for industrial folks why it's important to preserve that farmland?
It's a huge part of our economy. In fact, food and beverage manufacturing is at the center of our industrial market. And I think one of our biggest opportunities is the fact that we need to connect our agricultural community to those large manufacturers and really work across the spectrum of micro manufacturing and vertical integration in our agricultural community and connect that into the greater idea of food and beverage and the idea that we, and it's not just food and beverage either, it's other types of agricultural goods. But that sort of agro-economy is one of our largest opportunities. If we have so many people coming here, they see it as our identity, they see it as our culture, that should be elevated from an economic perspective just as much as we elevate those traditional in a facility manufacturing jobs. Because don't forget, those farmers are manufacturers. And then and we don't think of them that way traditionally, and we need to really start doing that. And I think that's a huge opportunity. A lot of people are working on that problem, by the way, too, and there's too many to name here today, but there is a lot of goodwill around that issue and a lot of people working very hard on it, whether it's the farmers themselves or, you know, Penn State Extension, Buy Fresh, Buy Local, our farmers markets. I mean, there's so much happening in that regard that really makes us unique that I think is only going to elevate the more we focus on it. And again, that gets back to the balance is, you know, you have small, you have medium, you have large. We have to work all of those together and not just pick one industry or one scale of industry over another, because that then inherently marginalizes the other types of industries that really are in that sector.
This is incredibly interesting information. This is why we're going to have a monthly program with Becky to talk about these issues. We have to wrap up for today, but once again, I'd like to thank you both very much for being on today and look forward to our future shows.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
You are listening to Plan Lehigh Valley on WDIY. I'm your host, Greg Caponia. Have a great evening.